Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And away we go. Hour number three of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Also, let me remind you that CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is always 855-212-4227. Sponsored by our dear friends at Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. Mike Breen, the voice of the NBA on ESPN and ABC, is going to join us coming up at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, so 20 minutes from now. We will chat with Mike Breen. And right now, I see on the line, I got a good little poll result that came from Hoops Hype from 15 NBA talent evaluators, which included 4 GMs, 6 executives, and 5 scouts. And I'll give you some of those results for players that they want to build their franchise around that are under 25 in just a moment. I see a man on the line that once called me up right when we started the show and said he wanted the Packers to get rid of Aaron Rodgers. And then he started to see Aaron Rodgers play a little bit more, and he was like, all right, maybe they should keep Aaron Rodgers. And then when the whole draft stuff did go down, I think if memory serves me right, and he was annoyed with what the organization did, but I believe he was back on getting Rodgers out of town train, if memory does serve me right. So whatever happens when Conrad in Milwaukee calls in, I don't know, but I'm usually entertained by it and I'm intrigued by it. So let's get to Conrad right now. Conrad, what type of mood are you in today? Do you like Rodgers or do you hate him? I'm just going to go out on a limb that you like him right now because the guy's 2-0, right?
Man, I cannot even believe what I'm seeing right now. I mean, and you know what? I bleed green and gold, and I always will. I love me some Russell Wilson. I'll tune in every day of the week if he's on TV. But, man, Aaron Rodgers right now, he is an absolute MVP-caliber quarterback in the NFL. And I can't believe that I'm saying that. It's blowing my mind. I absolutely love what I see. And – but I do know that the guy, Aaron Jones, is pretty darn good.
Of course
and
Hold on. When you have a great player, don't make excuses. When you have a great player here, Conrad, and we go on the Conrad merry-go-round of I love Rodgers and then I hate him, don't tell me, oh, yeah, Aaron Jones is a great player. Yeah, he's a great player. So is Davante Adams. That's what competent organizations do. They have a great quarterback and they build around him. Now, your organization, you know, they made some boneheaded decisions. Lazard and MVS, they're looking like they're okay. But I guarantee you this. I don't know if we all know Aaron Jones if it's not for Aaron Rodgers and the way that he leads that offense, too.
You know, it's so fun to watch it, though. I mean, honestly, like last year when we struggled on offense and even Aaron Rodgers, he was one to say, like, we have a defense. Now, clearly, if you've watched these games, our boys like to let the running game just run wild. But what we're getting good at is keeping the offense on the field. And I think that has to be the fruit of Matt LaFleur's offense, because when this all started last year, it was so new to everybody. They'd been so entrenched in everything that they've ever known with Mike McCarthy. Dallas, be aware. And you know what? Here's the deal. Like, we're getting to see like more motion. There's more motion in the last 2 weeks probably than I saw in the first 8 weeks last year. I mean, there's so much more activity going on. I really enjoy watching this offense play out. And I think I will absolutely admit to you that I was wrong.
Of course you were wrong. I told you it from the start. You had Brett Favre, then you got Rodgers, and you became a spoiled person thinking it would be so easy to just get rid of Rodgers and come on back and replace him with Joe Schmo. Now you eat your crow, and you will enjoy the next 2-3 years of Aaron Rodgers. And
That's not even – that's not going to happen.
You drafted a quarterback in the first round. You don't think they're going to play him in three, 4 years?
Okay. 3 years. And 3 years is a lot. Like, I mean, are we counting this year and two more after this?
Yeah.
I mean, I do not see – if anything, the leadership decisions that are coming out of Green Bay, this was a strategic decision. Really, if you look at what John Gruden did.
No, it wasn't. It was not a strategic decision. You know what it was? It was a decision. We're going to go make our shot with the new regime. And then they just kind of forgot, oh, yeah, this guy Rodgers is pretty damn good, and he's going to elevate everyone.
Brett Favre always had a competition level ramping up behind him, and he had to do something special. And really, there was years that he didn't, except for that he showed up every day, hurt as he could, hurt more than probably every quarterback in that.
Oh, you can't say that. Jeez Louise. Hey, you know, we give the guy a little extra airtime. And then he has to drop that word that he's not allowed to say. And you know it was an innocuous mistake by one Conrad. I guess I'm at fault there. You know I'm at fault there? Because I'm the conductor of the Conrad merry-go-round. And on the Conrad merry-go-round, you never know what's going to come out of that merry-go-round. Because 1 week, get rid of Rodgers. The next week, I love Rodgers. Now, I don't want to see Jordan Love on the field. It's 2 weeks. Packer fans should be very happy with what they're seeing. I think this team, and here's what I'll say. Are they in the Super Bowl conversation? Yes, they are. Do I believe in my heart that they're going to be in the Super Bowl this year? No, I don't. Right now, no, I don't. And that decision still moving forward is going to be a big one where it's two parts. One, when do you say that you just messed up with Jordan Love? Two, when do you want to see Jordan Love on the field if you're the Packers organization? And then number three, what happens if Rodgers comes to you and goes, I said all the right things this year. I love this organization. I don't want to be here anymore. But what happens if he says that? He said all the right things this year. What happens if it does change? So, you know what Conrad was like right there, Connor? Conrad was like the Boston Celtics. Plays well for about 75% of the game, and then in the fourth quarter, he bleeped the you-know-what. He bleeped the bed.
He blew a 28-3 lead.
Yes.
Right out of nowhere. You didn't even see it coming.
That joke is actually outdated now when we talk about the Falcons. And trust me, I love making 28-3 jokes. Now when we talk about Atlanta, we talk about them not knowing how to recover an onside kick and blowing a game to the Dallas Cowboys. Oy. Imagine being a Falcons fan. And you think about some of the tough losses that Atlanta's had with their football team, also with Georgia. You go back to, remember the Braves last postseason? They couldn't even get out of the first inning. Yeah, Atlanta's had some bad beats. Let me get to this poll, though. And when I get to this poll, you know who wasn't on this poll? I was surprised, very surprised, that Trae Young, I don't think I saw Trae Young of the Hawks on here. That's someone, since we bring up Atlanta, he's 22. I would definitely love to build my team around Trae Young. So Hoops Hypes did this survey where it's 15 NBA talent evaluators, 4 GMs, 6 executives, and 5 scouts, where they want to know that players under 25, who's the player that the GM or the executive or the scout would take to build their team around? And I don't think Trae Young was on this list. So one was Luka. And you know what? Let me do it the more fun way. I just gave you the number one answer. Everyone knew it was Luka Doncic. I'm going to go from 13 to 1. 13 was Karl Anthony Towns, which, yes, he's still under 25 years old, which is wild. Then you had De'Aaron Fox and Jalen Bond tied for Jalen Brown. Jalen Bond was the former big man at Texas and Temple. But you have De'Aaron Fox and Jalen Brown tied for 11th. Jalen Brown, I don't think he's a player you build your franchise around. Great personality, great person, good two-way player. I don't think he's a great overall player. I just think he's a very good player. And that's not a knock on him, but there's a difference building a team around Jaylen Brown and then having Jaylen Brown be your second or third best player. De'Aaron Fox I like a lot. I think De'Aaron Fox, and not to sound like Booger McFarland, but he could be one of the more underrated players in our league. I really do think that with De'Aaron Fox. Then at ninth in this survey, Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram tied for ninth. Would you rather have Ben Simmons or would you rather have Brandon Ingram? I think the better overall player is Ben Simmons. I kind of like, though, in terms of my team, and I don't think Ingram is a number one. I think he's more of a two in terms of star players on your team. Is Ben the best player on a team? I think as good of a facilitator he is, without that jump shot, I think he's more of a two compared to a one in terms of best player on a team. The thing that I like more about Ingram is that Ingram, what he does is he advanced his game this year. Got off to a bad start and showed you an improvement. For Ben, we haven't seen that improvement yet. We haven't. We have not seen that improvement yet where it comes in his best part of his game or the game that needs the improvement the most and his worst part of the game, which is shooting a jump shot. So we got to see Ben take that next step, where Ingram this year took an extra step in the right direction. Tied for seventh on this poll, Jamal Murray, which after this postseason, I think Jamal Murray's stock is going right through the roof. And how about this? I would have thought Zion would have been in the top five or top three. Zion is in at seven. That tells me that people are concerned about the health of Zion Williamson. Jamal Murray, though, I wondered if he was great going into this postseason. I wondered that. I liked him a lot. I liked that Nuggets team. I wondered if he was great, though. And Jamal Murray has shown his greatness in this postseason. And that's a good point that Termini did bring up. You just want to see how many of these guys have had really good postseason. Jamal Murray's had a good regular season, and he's been in the postseason before. And he had some demons last year in the postseason and has overcome that and played a really good brand of basketball. But how many of these players continue the success that they've done in the postseason? And then real quickly, because we got to get to Mike Breen. Bam Adebayo and Donovan Mitchell tied for fifth. I love Donovan Mitchell. I do. Bam, I like Bam a lot. Do I think he can be the lead guy in a championship team? No, I don't. Ja Morant at four, Devin Booker at three, and then one and two is so obvious. Two was Jason Tatum, and then one was Luka Doncic. How is Trae Young not in this list? I don't get that whatsoever. Build a team around? You'd rather have Trae Young or you'd rather have Jaylen Brown? I'd rather have Trae Young, if we're being honest. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Good conversation coming up in 5 minutes with Mike Breen.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
All right, we continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. Boston Celtics are now down to the Miami Heat, 3-1 after last night. Coming up tonight, we do have a Game 4 in the NBA Western Conference Finals as the Lakers try to take a 3-1 lead up against the Denver Nuggets. Let's head down to the bubble, and we'll welcome in the voice of the NBA playoffs on ESPN and also ABC. And that's the legendary Mike Breen here with us once again on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Mike, thanks for the time. How you been, my friend?
I'm good, Zach. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. And everyone, I think, had this moment during quarantine when the pandemic first started where they were finding old archive moments, whether it was video, audio, or even some pictures when you were a lot younger. I found a video from an old Imus in the Morning broadcast, and don't get too nervous. It was nothing too crazy, but it was at Fiddler's Elbow. It was you, my father, Mike Francesa, and the late Don Imus. What a golf day that was, seeing Don choke in the big spot.
Well, those were the days we had that golf tournament several years in a row, and it was always for the Hackensack Medical Center, raising money for them, and the Cox Classic as well, which, you know, the event was for a great cause, but it always had its craziness and fun, and you know, I certainly miss those days.
So they had you and Mike doing the announcing for it, and I won't forget this when I was looking back at it. I have to throw my dad under the bus. Like, what a moron, what a mush. After I miss his tee shot, he starts celebrating, saying, we're going to be home in four. That was the ultimate jicks moment by one Bob Gelb.
Well, anybody that's ever played golf, until the ball's in the cup, don't say a word. Keep your mouth shut.
100%. And if you've seen my golf game, I would stand by that 100%. Mike Breen here with us. Mike, I was thinking about this when I was walking over. Besides Fiddler's Elbow being one of your legendary broadcasting moments, I was thinking about my favorite call of yours, and the first thing that comes to mind is Block by James and that epic 3-1 comeback to get LeBron that championship with the Cavs up against the Warriors. And I'm just wondering, throughout all these years of great moments, if you had the best seat in the house for them, what have been some of your favorite and best calls, in your opinion?
That's a hard question, Zach. This, you know, that you have a lot of memories from going over the years. Even back when I was doing Nick Radio back in the 90s, you know, I tell people sometimes one of my favorite calls was the John Starks dunk against the Chicago Bulls in the playoffs. But I would think, you know, the LeBron James block is up there, the Ray Allen three-pointer in Game 6 of the 2013 Finals, that's up there as well. There were some Jeremy Lin moments where he hit big shots during Linsanity. A lot of warrior stuff. Steph Curry's had some phenomenal performances. So I've just been really blessed to have a lot of fun moments of calling games of these extraordinary players. So I'm a very lucky man.
When you have a night where you see the Allen shot in the corner in Game 6, or the LeBron block in a Game 7, how long after the broadcast does it take you to wind down and actually put the head on the pillow and go to sleep?
You know, that's a good question. You have so much adrenaline, and even if you're exhausted that day, say you had a long day and the game goes on and you get back late, the adrenaline, it takes several hours before it just stops flowing, because, you know, especially games like that. I mean, that's all of us play-by-play broadcasters. We live for those moments. You live for the big games. So you get so fired up, and it does take a while to settle down and come down. So it takes a few hours. And there's also the games, you know, where you're doing a game and you maybe make a mistake in the game, and you think about it the whole night, and it's like you can't go to sleep going back, oh, I wish I had that call back, or, you know, or missed that one. So there's all sorts of reasons why it takes a while, but especially the ones that, you know, when you have a really fun, thrilling game, it takes a while for the adrenaline to go away.
Mike Breen here with us. Mike, if we were doing one of these cheesy radio bits where they didn't tell me who was coming on the show and I had to guess who was going to be the guest, all I would have to hear is just in the clue would someone say bang, and then right away I would know it would be Mike Breen. I've never asked you this. I'm sure people have asked you this throughout the years, though. Is there a background story on how bang became your signature call? Because in every big moment NBA playoff game, you just expect to hear bang towards the final 30 seconds, minute of a game.
No, this. I wish I had some kind of great story to tell you on it, Zach, but it actually started when I was in college. I went to Fordham University in the Bronx, and I worked at the college radio station, WFUV, and we used to do the Fordham men's and women's basketball games. And the games that we didn't do, we would go as student fans. So, you know, I would travel all around the tri-state area watching my school's team. I was a big Fordham Rams basketball fan. So when I wasn't calling the games for the station, I was there in the stands. And I started doing it in the stands. A Fordham player would hit a big shot, and I would yell bang as a fan in the stands. And I thought about, hey, you know, why don't I try it on the air for a big shot? And I tried it on the air, and ironically, when I first started doing it, I didn't particularly like it. I didn't know if it worked because it was on radio. But then years later, I tried it again, and the reason I started to like it was because it was a very quick, concise way to call a big shot in a big moment where you don't have to use your voice to override the crowd. In fact, you give the bang call, and you get out of the way, and you let the crowd come in and kind of take it away from there. So it was a good, concise way in a very loud arena. Ironically, that doesn't apply right now, but that's how it got started. And you know, it's funny, I'm not the only person that used that. I didn't know it at the time, But Johnny Most, the great Celtic broadcaster, he used it for a while, too. There's another play-by-play guy in Philadelphia named Steve Fredericks, who I found out later used it. And then a guy named Jay Howard, who was a longtime Spurs announcer, used it. You know, back in the day when nobody heard other announcers in other cities, unless it was a national. So I'm not the first one to use it, but I've it's been very helpful to me in my career, and it's a nice, easy way to you know, put an exclamation point on a big play.
We share something in common. I actually use something that Steve Fredericks used to use as well. My intro each and every night, I say, live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of 345 Hudson Street, Steve Fredericks back in the day used to say the same thing, except he would say WCAU. So, hey, you know, things in this industry, you know it, they get reinvented throughout the years. But you were saying you were close to putting bang in the trash can and not using it?
Yeah, for some reason, and I don't remember particularly why, Zach, but when I first did it a few times, I'm like, I don't know if that sounds good. I don't know. Maybe I just put it on the side, and I didn't use it. And there was even one time when I first started using it on TV TV radio writer took a shot at saying, oh, that's such a lame call. Why does he use that? And it turned out to be something that was, you know, became popular. When I started using it, and I had a few people to say to me, hey, I like the way that sounds. That's a good way to do it. So I tried it more, and then more people said they liked it. So I stuck with it.
Who is it? Mushnick, Raceman? One of them were criticizing you, I'm assuming?
That doesn't really matter. It's just it was funny. And the ironic thing, though, Zach, is that I kind of felt the same way at first when I did it.
Mike Breen here with us. When you were a younger broadcaster, did you feel pressure to try to find that signature call, that signature moment? Or did you always feel, okay, just let things happen naturally and your work will shine?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I never felt that pressure. I think, you know, I think that's something that has to kind of just happen. If you try and force it, it sounds too contrived. You know, and there have been dozens of some of the great play-by-play broadcasters of all time who don't have necessarily a signature call. So, you know, if you find something that works for you, then that's great. But I was not, that's not what I was searching for. And then when I started using that, I didn't do it a lot. And I still don't use it very often. And I think that's important, because if you overuse certain phrases and certain things, it just starts to wear on fans. So you got to pick your spots with it, I believe. That's always the way that I've tried to approach it.
I think it's worked out for you pretty darn well. Mike Breen here with us on the show. Tyler Herro, you got to see him last night. He was amazing. His confidence for a rookie has really stand out to me all throughout the playoffs. What is it about Herro that makes him just so impressive this playoffs?
Well, he has the trust of his coach and his teammates, so he's not afraid to make mistakes. And I think that's really important for a younger player. I've seen it so often over the years where a younger player is not as aggressive as they normally would be because they don't feel the trust from their coach or their teammates. But their teammates have really instilled confidence in him. And now, you know, he's not just a shooter. He can put the ball on the floor. He can score obviously from the 3-point line, but he can get to the rim. He's got a little mid-range game. And when he gets doubled, he's got excellent court vision. So he's a real handful offensively. And, you know, there's some players that just seem their game is better suited for the NBA. He seems to be one of them. And he's a different player when he came back after the bubble. He was a good player prior to the suspension. But he worked on his game and kept working on his various skills like ball handling. And when he got to the bubble, it was just he wasn't a rookie anymore, that's for sure. And that confidence that he has allows him to stay aggressive. Even the biggest game, I mean, it's the biggest game of his career last night. And there was no hesitation. There was no fear.
This Miami team, it's such a fun style that they play, and they're so gritty, and they don't have the most talent in the world, but they get the most out of that talent, and the Butler story has been sensational. I'll be honest, you know, being close to Philadelphia, when Jimmy Butler left the Sixers to go to Miami, I was scratching my head because Jimmy talks about how he's all about winning, and I was wrong on that one because his decision's working out very well as they're one game away from going to the finals. Was there a moment this year that you thought, okay, Miami's a little bit better than what people were giving them going into the year?
You know, I didn't really think that. I thought they were one of the better teams in the East all season, but I certainly would not have picked them to go to the finals. And they're now one win away. Because quite frankly, even like right before the suspension of the season, they weren't playing so well. They had made that trade. They got Iguodala. They got Crowder. But I think they were, if memory serves me correctly, I think they were 7-7 in the 14 games prior to the suspension of the season. So after that hot start, they kind of cooled off. Again, still thought they were good. But some teams have just been able to excel in the bubble. It really is it's a interesting dynamic down here, Zach. There's some players who have no problems playing at the same level. I think others are affected by not having the crowd, not having their families around. It's not an easy situation. It really is a challenge for these guys. I know they're staying in great hotels, and I know they're still getting paid a lot of money, but it's a roller coaster of emotions when you're down here day after day after day and away from your family and your loved ones. Obviously, some have their family down here now, but it's just not the same. And the heat, for some reason, the bubble has really enhanced some of their players, and they play so well together that they've been so good.
With what you just said about the bubble, Mike Breen, and I don't want to take away anything from what the Heat have done and what the Nuggets have done, but if there wasn't this pandemic, if there wasn't a stop in the season, do you think teams like the Bucks and the Clippers would have gone farther than what they ended up doing, which was get into the second round and then not get into the third round?
Yeah, you know, I don't like to get into those hypotheticals because this is the hand they were dealt. And they're all dealt the same hand. So it's not like one has an advantage over another in terms of the circumstances. It's a matter of how do you deal with it and how you're able to overcome these new challenges, these things that you've never had to deal with before as a player. So whatever, you know, obviously things may have been different, but it doesn't matter. What matters is the teams that are able to overcome the obstacles and the teams that are able to advance. And the Heat certainly are, you know, they've been fantastic. All four teams that are left have just done an amazing job in dealing with these unprecedented circumstances.
We've seen Boston, even going back to that Raptor series, struggle to close out games. I know that Boston clearly advanced and they won that game 7. And in games 1 and 2 of this Heat series, they had big leads and they couldn't slam the door shut. So I know Boston and their fan base are really going to be kicking themselves over the first two games. How much of a shot being down 3-1 do you give Boston to making this a series again?
Yeah, I said this the other night. Somebody asked me about, boy, Lakers are up 2-0. The series is probably over. And I said, there's just no way the series is over. All bets are off. All the usual predictions, all the usual analysis that you can do, it's different because, you know, every game now is in this very same arena. It's not like you're going to on the road or get your home crowd fired up, and the ones that find that motivation and the energy and are able to execute and be efficient, those are the teams that are going to advance. And Boston has that in them. You know, again, as you mentioned, those first two games could have easily gone their way. Last night could have easily gone their way. But, you know, a handful of plays or a two-minute stretch, and all of a sudden the game changes. So, again, because I think you don't have road games to worry about, I think that's why the Nuggets were able to overcome 3-1 deficits in the first two rounds, and the Celtics certainly have a chance to do that.
What do you look for tonight, game 4, between the Lakers and the Nuggets?
Well, I've been so much enjoying Jamal Murray. Talk about a young man who's obviously really talented and good, and now he believes he's as good as anybody on the floor. So I'm really looking forward to watching him play. I think for the Lakers, they need some LeBron James and Anthony Davis need some help. They need somebody to step up. Their role players and support players have been so hit or miss that they need to get going and give those guys a little bit of help so they don't have to do everything.
Was the effort a problem in the first three quarters in that game 3, in your opinion?
I wouldn't say effort. Effort, but the energy wasn't there. And, you know, I've seen that a lot, Zach, in the bubble, in that the, you know, some teams just, it's hard to come out with that same energy. Again, this is not a normal lifestyle these guys are living right now. And if for the people that are home watching, you know, you see the games and it's all fired up. But if you were in the arena 5 minutes before tip, it's almost eerie how quiet it is in the arena. And some nights, I would imagine, for these players, it's hard to get fired up right away because they've been here a long time. These guys have been here since the first week of July, for crying out loud. So they're July, August, September, you know, they're all over here 2.5 months already. So there are some nights that you just don't have that same energy. The effort, perhaps, but the energy sometimes wanes.
Last one for Mike Breen, kind enough to join us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Mike, of course, the legendary play-by-play man for ESPN and ABC when it comes to NBA basketball. Let me ask you about one team that's not in the bubble. That's the Chicago Bulls. There's a lot of good jobs open, and their job was filled the other day with Billy Donovan. I was a little bit surprised by it. Obviously, it's a good hire by Chicago. I just thought Billy was going to go elsewhere. How about yourself?
You know, I had not heard that he was in line for it, but you know, Billy Donovan, when he showed at Florida what a great coach he was of young players and developing young players and getting young players to buy in and play together, and Chicago has a lineup of some really talented young players. To me, it's a great fit. He's a terrific coach. I was really surprised that left Oklahoma City. I kind of understand it because they are probably going to go rebuild mode, but Oklahoma City's loss is Chicago's gain because Billy Donovan's always had a knack for developing younger players when he was a college coach.
Mike, you be well. We'll be watching. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Zach. Nice talking to you.
Great stuff with Mike Breen. Always do enjoy when he stops by and spends a few minutes with us. We got to take a break. When we do come on back, something I learned yesterday watching the Bill Belichick press conference with the sweatshirt with all the holes in his sweatshirt. I'll tell you what that is when we come on back in 5 minutes. First up, a little update, though. We get to act.
The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. I guess we'll spend a minute or two talking about this Pac-12 story. I hate to say this right now because I know I will eventually start watching a lot more than what I've been the first 2 weeks. It's kind of tough, though, for me to get excited for this college football season. And maybe that changes a little bit because you do have the SEC coming back this weekend. You have a lot of the marquee teams there. And because all these conferences, for the most part, are going in play, in conference, you haven't had, you know, those crazy games to start off the season where, like, some years you get an Oregon and an Auburn, you get a Michigan and a Notre Dame, and you get some good out-of-conference matchups. And I know Notre Dame's usually an independent, but this year they're partnering up with the ACC. It's tough, though, with how many reports we've seen for me to really get into it. You know what I compare it to? I kind of compare it to Major League Baseball, where baseball was just projectile vomiting on themselves, and they couldn't make a decision. You had all the crappy negotiations in the media, and the players were embarrassing themselves, and the owners were even embarrassing themselves even more. And they really pushed a lot of fans away. And I've watched the baseball here and there. I've seen a lot of my Mets. They've been miserable. They stink. They're not even going to make the postseason with 8 teams in each league. So they've been disappointed. I know the pitching staff by them has been abused. But I haven't felt that great joy in the baseball season this year because I don't put an asterisk on the NBA. I don't put an asterisk on the NHL. I'm not going to do so for the NFL. I'm not saying you put one for Major League Baseball. With only 60 games, though, with what we're used to and not seeing the majority of the regular season, it does feel as if it's a cheapened baseball season. Now, if you're a team like the Dodgers and you win the World Series, and or you're Chicago and you win the World Series, it's not, you're not going to give a rat's ass. You're not going to care and go, oh, it was a 60-game season. No, you're going to be sipping on champagne, getting the victory cigars out, and jumping up like a fat kid in a candy store. That's what you'll do. For me, though, it's tough to get invested in the baseball season. And for college football, early, it's tough for me to get invested. Because in some weeks, only ACC is playing, then the Big 12 is playing, SEC is getting ready to go this weekend, Big 10 was out, now the Big 10's back in, and even today, the Pac-12 was out, and now the Pac-12 is back in. As the Pac-12 season's going to begin on November 6th, they're only going to play 7 games, though. Better have those 7 games than nothing. You get those 7 games, the title game's going to be on December 18th. I have not read everything yet. This news is breaking within the hour, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. By them ending their season by December 18th, that tells me that the Pac-12 thinks that if they have an undefeated team at 7-0, they're going to get in a college football playoff. And we all know that there's probably not going to be a Pac-12 team that's undefeated, because each and every year, whenever the Pac-12 is close to getting into the playoffs, they find a way to ruin the opportunity. And last year, it looked like it was going to be Oregon, and then Oregon lost that game late. There was another team off the top of my head. I can't remember that was also involved in it last year. It wasn't Washington. Who was the other team in the Pac-12 last year? You had Oregon and you had someone else. I can't remember right now, but you had two teams basically fighting out for the entire year, and they kept on losing games that they shouldn't have lost. So they lost games late into the season. So when I look at this, you got to think, and I saw that Greg Sankey said today, that they're going to trust the college football playoff committee in terms of how Utah was the other team. It was Utah and Oregon were the two teams, if memory serves me right, that were in it last year, and they just kept on not reaching their potential. And when I heard Greg Sankey today from the SEC, the commissioner of the SEC, he basically said, "Oh yeah, we're going to trust the pack. We're going to trust the college football playoff committee, and we're going to trust them to determine how many games you got to play to get in and all that." And here's the SEC. What Sankey did there is basically, yeah, I'm going to trust the college football playoff committee. Why? Because you're going to probably get two teams in. That's what happens most years, where the SEC does get an advantage. They should get an advantage because they're the best conference in football. It's going to be compelling. I think they'll probably get through a season is my guess. And you're going to have some weeks where, like, Notre Dame has to cancel a game, or you had to see UNC cancel a game, Baylor cancel a game. That stuff's going to happen. I want to see, though, what the Final Four is going to look like from a college football playoff standpoint. So Ohio State, you think's in. Clemson, you think's going to get in. Is there another team that emerges? You know, does Oklahoma get in? Yeah, obviously LSU, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, you know, some of your big teams, Auburn in the SEC, they'll be in the mix. If you get, though, to a situation, how are you going to determine if you have, and this is something we do each and every year, but with not as many games, how do you determine where you draw the line? If the Pac-12 gets one loss in the 7, are they out? Yeah, probably. Then when you get to more games in the Big 12, is one loss, does it mean you're out? Not necessarily. To see, though, how they're going to swing that, assuming Ohio State gets in and assuming that Clemson gets in and one SEC team is going to get in, for that fourth spot, it's going to be, all right, one team in the Big 12, another team in the SEC, and another team in the Pac-12, and you're going to have to compare resumes. And that's what it's usually been most times. For the rooting interest, though, and we were on a conference call today with all the hosts on CBS Sports Radio, most of the hosts, and we're just talking about how it doesn't seem as if there's a lot of buzz with college football this year. And I'll be curious where that's going to be in 2-3 weeks from now. It would not surprise me if the hype does go back up. Early on, though, where at first only thought there was going to be 3 out of the 5 Power 5, now all the 5 Power 5 conferences are going to be played. Going to be playing. Yeah, Big 10 seems legit. Pac-12 playing 7 games. Yeah, you don't love it, but for those kids, it's better than playing nothing. So I guess with what I'll say with college football is basically what I'm saying in a longer forum here, is I'll roll with the punches, and it would not surprise me later in the season if I end up getting more involved and invested in it as I have in years past. The way, though, that there's been a lack of communication really with the Big 10, I think it did push away a lot of people. I mean, it starts to get politicized too. I don't want to say that it's making me lose interest in it, but when President Trump is basically making it seem as if he saved college football, and then you start making reasons why you should vote or you shouldn't vote for him, I just want to watch. I just want to watch the college football and not have to hear, oh, well, you know what? This is the what happened with President Trump getting the sport back is now I have to thank him for that. Like, come on. The Big Ten should have been playing from the start. They should have been. And I don't buy whatsoever that the Big Ten's coming on back because of the advancements in testing. The Big Ten, they're coming on back because they thought the other three Power 5 conferences were going to join them like what the Pac-12 did. They didn't blink. They didn't blink whatsoever. And then you see the game start to get underway, and the last thing the Big Ten wants is egg on their face at the end of the year and go, oh, my goodness gracious. Oh, my goodness gracious. We didn't have a season, and the other Power 5 conferences got through a season. So that's where I'm at with college football. It's just the mess they put us through. It's tough to then get back and go, all right, here we go. We got a season to go see a team in a conference play another conference game to just not be a marquee matchup. Let me spend 1 minute, though, on this before we got to take a break, and we got to have a hard out in just a second. You saw this Belichick photo the other day circulate, which I absolutely love, where Belichick, no days off, no days off, no days off. We are, after the loss to Seattle, we are on to Las Vegas, where Belichick shows up to the press conference as if he looks like he has not slept in 3 days since the loss, and he shows up with this hoodie, traditional, normal, and about 9 or 10 holes in the sweatshirt, and this started to create a frenzy on Twitter. Here is my biggest takeaway from that. Has nothing to do with Belichick. If that's Bill Belichick showing up to work, and even he has seen a change in his wardrobe, where it's usually just a sweatshirt, and the sweatshirt doesn't have all the holes, what happens when you return to the office? Because I'm looking around our office right now. We got 4 or 5 people in the office. I would never, now, sometimes I actually go to work in shorts and a t-shirt, but I'm literally wearing a plain white t-shirt and mesh shorts. If Boomer Esiason saw me right now, he would probably get me kicked out of 345 Hudson Street. So if Belichick's showing up to work like that with 6 Super Bowl champions and basically the leader in the organization, how many people around the world that have been sitting in their shorts or maybe even in their boxers and a t-shirt on Zoom or on a business call and haven't had to go in the office? When you have to go back into the office, you're going to be wearing jeans? You're going to be wearing slacks? And are you going to like that, or are you going to look like a slob and then your boss going to tell you you better clean up?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.